What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The governor of North Carolina declares an emergency over school choice as a scholarship program for low-income students in Illinois is allowed to expire. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We are joined today by my colleagues, columnist Kim Strassel and editorial board member Colin Levy. Let's start today in North Carolina, where Governor Roy Cooper issued an emergency. And here is a clip of his statement.
It's time to declare a state of emergency for public education in North Carolina. It's clear that the Republican legislature is aiming to choke the life out of public education. Their private school voucher scheme will pour your tax money into private schools that are unaccountable to the public and can decide which students they want to keep out. They want to expand private school vouchers so that anyone, even a millionaire, can get taxpayer money for their children's private academy tuition. This drops an atomic bomb on public education by shrinking the state's budget by almost 20%. Public school superintendents are telling me they'll likely have to cut schools to the bone.
Kim, what do you make of the governor's statement there?
Oh my goodness, what a pack of baloney and what a stunt as well, declaring an emergency. Look, this is only going to drop an atomic bomb on Roy Cooper's main backers, which are the teachers union. What we're really talking about here is a Republican legislature in North Carolina that's putting out a new budget and it's got some provisions in it. One of them is that, yes, North Carolina is going to go and follow in the wake of a number of other states and essentially offer universal school choice, meaning any family, regardless of income, can apply for vouchers for K through 12. And some of the money that would go to the public schools would follow them into other institutions if that is what they choose to do. Now, Roy Cooper is saying, oh my gosh, this will cut the schools to the bone. By some estimates, there are some estimates from the left saying this could cut $200 million out of public school budgets. But a couple of points just to make here. One is the budget also includes a big teacher pay increase for public school teachers to give them more resources. And as we all know, too, private vouchers do not necessarily have to harm public schools, especially if those public schools respond to the challenge of competing against other facilities. And that is one of the great merits of school choice, is that you don't just have a teachers union monopoly that sucks up ever more taxpayer dollars. The one thing that Cooper got entirely wrong there is he was saying that this is going to somehow create a situation in which there are private schools that are not accountable to the public. No, they're entirely accountable to the parents. The parents are going to make decisions about where to send their kids. The difference is that legislation like this is finally trying to inject some accountability into the public school environment. And it looks like the Republicans have the vote to pass this, and Cooper's just annoyed because he can't necessarily veto it because they have super majorities.
You call it a stunt, and it seems to me that what good does declaring an emergency do if it does not unlock some kind of gubernatorial powers that he is going to use to oppose this? Or is this just a matter of rhetoric? And it calls to mind another recent example. The NAACP recently issued a travel advisory for the state of Florida, warning people if they are going to visit Florida to be aware of open hostility toward African Americans and people of color. This was in response, it said, direct response to Governor Ron DeSantis's policies on school, what the NAACP called his attempts to erase Black history. But Colin, go look into this matter. You will find, as the Florida Department of Education says, that the state law requires instruction on the enslavement experience, abolition, the civil rights movement. And by the way, if you look at the test scores, the NAEP test scores, national tests, Black eighth graders in Florida are doing better in reading and better in math than they are nationally, and also better than they're doing in Maryland, which is where the NAACP is headquartered. And so that stunt is what comes to mind for that example, at least to me as well. And it's this school choice stuff it really gets people on the left riled up.
No, Kyle, that's for sure. I mean, I think these were both extremely hyperbolic scare campaigns. In terms of what happened in Florida, I actually found it sort of sad because it really transformed a discussion that's fundamentally about policy. No question, quite a contentious policy, but policy about what schools should be teaching and which sources they should be using and trying to present kids with a history of America's racial history. Now, that history is painful, and debates about which sources to use and presenting it shouldn't immediately degenerate into accusations that your political adversaries are racist. As you said, Florida's public schools are required by law to teach students about the enslavement experience and abolition and the civil rights movement. And turning this into a stunt the way the NAACP did, saying that Florida is fundamentally against all African Americans, I just thought was really unfortunate. And as far as what's going on in North Carolina, I wanted to elaborate a little bit on what Kim's saying, because I found the statement from Governor Cooper so disingenuous. You know, claiming that voucher programs are the problem in public education is total misdirection. Voucher programs are a response to an insane ongoing problem of failure in the public school system. And they're an imperfect way, but nonetheless a way of rescuing some kids from that failure. And as Kim said, giving the parents some choice here. So critics often say that these school choice programs are stripping public schools or jeopardizing public education. But I think it's critical that we remember here that the point of public education, the reason this nation guarantees a public education, was to guarantee to all students that they receive a free education paid for by the state. It's not to guarantee that all teachers and teachers' unions and pieces of the state education monopoly, that their jobs and status and power be protected at the expense of the students they're supposed to be serving.
Kim, it is remarkable, though, for conservatives who think that they are not making any progress, that Republicans haven't won anything or conserved anything. It is remarkable to go back and look at the record of the school choice movement, which began fairly recent history. And especially in just the past few years, there have been big victories, universal choice coming to Florida under Governor Ron DeSantis, I believe Arizona. There are all of these states that are doing these programs. And it seems to me that's because they're popular and they work and parents like them and parents appreciate them. And, you know, I've cited this polling a few times, but if you look at the exit polls for Ron DeSantis's first run for governor, he won very, very narrowly and got a higher percentage of Black women votes than maybe you would have expected. That looks like a little bit of an outlier in the poll. And there's some analysts down in Florida who suggest that that's because his opponent promised to eliminate and roll back these Florida school choice programs, and Governor Ron DeSantis promised to expand them. And now we're talking about North Carolina, which is a red state, but with a Democratic governor. And it's not only that this plan looks like it is going to pass the legislature, it looks like it's going to probably be vetoed. And then the veto may be overridden because the Republicans hold a supermajority there. And that's in part thanks to one Democratic defector, a state legislator who was a Democrat and has changed recently to a Republican. And part of that looks like, according to the statements she has made, that she has been convinced by school choice.
For all those on the left who are complaining about these school choice initiatives, this is an example of you reap what you sow, okay? Because there is a straight line between everything that happened in COVID and what we now see is a school choice revolution. School choice has been around for a long time, and you saw it mostly just around the edges and in red states. It is now storming across the United States. Just to build on what you said, Florida, universal school choice, but also Iowa, Utah, Arkansas, West Virginia, and Arizona. There are pending bills for universal school choice in Oklahoma, Ohio, Wyoming, and Texas. There's more limited forms of school choice being debated in Nebraska, South Carolina, Kansas, and Pennsylvania. And again, most of this exploded ever since people were stuck in their homes and saw what a horrible job some of these public sector teachers were doing and watched their school districts refuse to reopen and held at the hostage of these union demands. Whereas by contrast, private schools were doing their best to be open and doing a better job of educating kids. So this is why you see exploding. It also helps that you've got a lot of energized parents these days that have funneled a lot of their attention into some of these activist groups that are really engaged at the moment. We had the midterms last year, and there might not have been any big waves to either side, except for in the area of school choice. This outfit called Americans for Children, which Corey DeAngelis, who writes for us, is involved with, they challenged 69 incumbents in the last election, and they took out 40 of them that were opposed to school choice. And so we're just seeing this incredible momentum. And in North Carolina, yes, there is a very high likelihood that the Republicans will override any veto by Roy Cooper. And that's in part not just because of the one Democrat who changed her affiliation to the Republican Party over this issue of education, but you had a number of Democrats who voted recently for that Senate budget and universal school vouchers, because even more moderate Democrats are understanding the power of this issue and that voters, in terms of parents, are going to punish those who stand in the way.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
The holidays have arrived early with Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale. Upgrading window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact. Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Browse premium blinds, shades, shutters. We have your patio covered too. And get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. Free shipping and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale now. Save up to 45% plus premium doorbusters. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Don't forget, you can reach the latest episode of Potomac Watch anytime. Just ask your smart speaker, play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. School choice, as we've said before the break, is expanding in red and purple states. And then there's Illinois. Colin, give us a sense of what is going on in Illinois with this Invest in Kids scholarship program.
Right, Kyle. So we've just talked about how many states are expanding and improving on their school choice programs, how much demand there is for it, how much parents like it, how much it empowers them, how much it creates accountability for the public schools, all of those things. So Illinois now has the dubious honor of probably being the first state that is going to get rid of its very small school choice program. What Illinois has, this program called Invest in Kids, is a system that basically offers privately funded scholarships to students who can then take them to private schools, you know, across the state. Those donations from private individuals are then available to go against, to become an income tax credit. So there is that, which is why the all of the state lawmakers get to get involved with this. But the program has been immensely popular across the state. You have enormous support for it, especially in communities that really need it. Notably, you know, if you look at families in the Black community, you have 61% of Black voters who support it. You've got 81% of Hispanic families who support it. 67% of state Democrats support it. And again, Kyle, it's really important to remember this is a very small program. It has 9,000 kids in it right now. So this is not a vast thing that's somehow threatening the public education monopoly. But the teachers unions look at this and they go, wow, all of these kids lined up for these scholarship programs is kind of embarrassing. They've got, I think, 5 kids lined up for every 1 scholarship that they're able to offer. So the teachers union see that that's really an indictment of the failure of the education that they're providing. And so they are dead set on stomping it out. And it looks like that's what they have done now. They were trying to get this tagged on to the budget implementation bill, which would have been its best chance of getting renewed. It's basically set to sunset next year. And they didn't manage to do that. And that's because the Democrats weren't able to get the votes to get on board with that. Teachers unions shut it down. And so you're now going to have those 9,000 kids who will have to figure out another way to get an education in their failing public schools.
Kim, am I wrong that if a Republican state, Republican legislature were ending scholarships for low-income kids, that story would be all over the place? And where are the progressive groups? Where are the civil rights organizations here? I mean, I seem to remember that there used to be some Democrats who were in favor of school choice. Cory Booker, mayor of Newark, was one. Barack Obama occasionally would say nice things about school choice. What has happened that now we seem to have been completely polarized on this issue, that even something as small and as targeted as this in Illinois can't get reauthorized?
Well, a couple of things. I think, first of all, just the tilt in the Democratic Party more toward the progressive wing, which hates any kind of choice. Let's just be clear. they don't just hate school choice. They hate Americans having any choice over anything. And so I think that has muted some of the politicians who might otherwise be speaking out on this. And just to go back to that North Carolina example, the Democrat who switched parties to the Republican side did it over education and gave some very impassioned speech saying just how frustrated and upset she was with the modern Democratic Party, that it could not get on board with policies that would actually help low-income kids who they claim to care about. That in fact, instead what they were doing, and this is the other piece of the explanation, Kyle, is catering to the unions and the union dollars. And let's just be clear about that. The Democratic Party is owned by public unions, in particular the teachers' unions, which are a behemoth. They hand over vast amounts of campaign donations, play huge roles in get out the votes for Democrats. And so what the teachers' unions demand is what the modern Democratic Party gives. And it doesn't matter how detrimental that is to kids. Remember the conversation we had back in COVID when Rochelle Walensky, who headed the CDC, dared to come out and say, hey, schools can open safely. And we're not that concerned about that. That's a step forward. And the White House immediately came out and said that she was speaking in a personal capacity. And then we find out later that the union helped write the opening guidance for schools, which made it much harder for them to open. So they're owned by the unions. And unfortunately, that has made it really hard to get some of these really important opportunity scholarships and other programs off the ground or kept in place in more and more blue states.
While we're in Illinois, Colin, Chicago's new mayor, Brandon Johnson, was inaugurated last week. How's he doing? And what are his allies now, the progressives who helped him get elected? What are they asking him to do?
Well, they are asking him to bring in more money, to give more money to all of their special causes. And this tethers quite nicely to what the teachers' unions do, because you know, I was just going to add to what Kim was saying, that, you know, the union answer is always that the way that we're going to save public schools is to have more money. And Illinois spends $16,000 a year per student, and that's the eighth most per pupil in the country. You know, when you add it all up, it's the most in the Midwest, and their outcomes are absolutely dreadful. I mean, we've got only about a third of Illinois students are proficient in reading or math last year. That's atrocious for the amount of money we spend. And in terms of what Brandon Johnson's, we know that Brandon Johnson is obviously a major ally of the Chicago Teachers Union. This report by his allies said specifically that we need $12 billion more in tax revenue and savings in order to make Chicago really safe by addressing issues that underlie crime and poverty. And that he should do that by trying to collect more money from the wealthy and from the corporations so that they'll pay what they owe. And that can include things like putting a head tax on businesses. The report said we could raise the real estate transfer tax on sales over $1 million. They're even targeting landlords with luxury apartments. And if those apartments stand vacant, they think the landlords should pay a fee to encourage the landlords to lower their rents. I mean, if there's anything more preposterous, if it's not an enormous burden to be carrying an empty apartment month after month for thousands of dollars, the city should also put a fee, and that might finally encourage the landlords to price things correctly. It's just preposterous. Bits of savings that they think we could get out of the government obviously come from trying to narrow down the money that goes to the policing and surveillance. It's also a big target of the report.
And Kim, maybe not all of this will get through or get done, but even the fact that it is floating around there, I think, is a warning to businesses that either are in Chicago and thinking about leaving, or businesses that are looking for places to go. And it goes back to a question that we talked about a couple of days ago on the topic of these new census figures that show big American cities losing population. You know, New York lost something like 450,000 people between 2020 and 2022. And Chicago, I think, maybe is exhibit one in city dysfunction. And the question that has struck me here in the last couple of days is, the question is not whether Chicago can be saved. It's whether the people that who are there want it to be saved at this point, because the way to do a turnaround is pretty clear. It is not a mystery to crack crackdown on shoplifting and so forth. But it seems like they are not sufficiently mugged by reality there to get to that point yet.
Well, the mugging may be coming soon. I mean, look, you read that document. The caller was just like, what an advertisement to move to Chicago, right? If you're a business or an individual, you know? I mean, tax me more. Give me no police. Make sure my rents are impossible. It's just like who writes this stuff? You know, and this is a city that had lost 81,000 people over the period from mid-2020 to mid-2022. And there's going to be more businesses that left. There have been some of these very high profile examples of businesses that have simply fled Chicago. We've all seen the pictures of the formerly wonderful Miracle Mile sitting empty. Nobody wants to be there. And if this is the blueprint for how you get it back, you know, just write off Chicago. And I'm sorry, Colin, I know it's your home, but you know, what are you going to do? And so I think you're right, Kyle. Unfortunately, sometimes things have to get a lot worse before they can get better. We've seen this in some other cities that only when they hit rock bottom was the voting public moved to elect people that will make things better. And unfortunately, in my view, Chicago made the wrong choice in the last election. They did have an opportunity to elect somebody that probably would have made some progress, but they pulled the lever for someone else. And now we can see their plans.
Thank you, Kim and Colin. Thank you all for listening. You can email us at pwpodcast@wsj.com. If you like the show, please hit that subscribe button, and we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.